Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome in to another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. We are right fresh after 4th of July coming in here, so I hope you guys had a very good vacation, but it's time to get back to talking hockey. We're going to be doing free agency. What is the lineup shaking out like? Dev Camp and the NHL draft picks. Get in the chat, like and subscribe. Hey, let's go. All right, guys. Well, we are back. I hope everybody had a great holiday. You guys have some fun out there or what?
Yeah, as you can see, I got a little sun. I was out in Columbus, Ohio. I have a cousin.
So okay, wait. Sorry. Yeah. So you left LA to get sun in Columbus, Ohio. Did I hear that right?
You did. So yeah, I have a cousin that lives in a place called Buckeye Lake. Out in Columbus, is about a half mile east, and really nice area. I mean, it's a big man-made lake. You do all the lake stuff, boats, jet skis, mm-hmm. hang out, and all that stuff. But yeah, it's a good time out there. But it's nice to be back home. How you fellas doing?
Good. I've never actually been to Columbus, but I've heard nothing but great things. Like, and it's an underrated city.
Yeah, great people.
Yeah. It's.
Were you part of the return for Jonathan Quick? While you were out there.
No, good though, Randy. Good though. Like a little bit of a light 4th of July with the two young ones. They don't make it up that late, so all you do is put them to bed and then just hope that they don't wake up from the fireworks. So that you just cross your fingers once you put them down and hope for the best. So it was good though. It was good. Kyle, how you doing?
Good. Just really don't do much 4th of July. Just sit in, watch some baseball. And unfortunately, the Dodgers couldn't hang on to it last night. But, it is what it is. For the fireworks, we don't do any anymore. Just listen to them outside. They keep going to like 1 in the morning, so it's hard to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of a bummer is on a Tuesday, right? Kind of.
Oh, yeah. Like, I have to go back into work the next day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I worked on 4th of July, and then I got off early. So it was nice. Sold two cars and then got to get out of there. So it was good. I was surprised how many people were there to buy vehicles, but hey, make a little money and then spend a little money, out by the pool, copious amounts of beers and sun and pass out. It's pretty much what it was, watching fireworks a little bit. You could see the fireworks for Fort Worth from my balcony. So the apartment complex's balcony, so you go up to the 4th floor and watch it. It was a good time. But let's get into the chat here. We got Al Smith. Let's go Royalty. Topanga, afternoon, gents. Brandon with the Go Kings Go. Lee with good evening, lads. Looking forward to this. Noah with the Go Kings Go. Brandon coming back with can't wait for the season. Shakemaster echoes that with, is it September yet? Kings rule. Hey, fellow Kings fans, I think it's been a good week. We'll be talking about that nav with us up, boys. Carter scores given Kyle season. Somebody's pumped up for some Kyle in this podcast here. Lieb echoes that as well. And Shank is asking, Joe, where's your Dodgers at? You should have put that on Amazon Prime.
I've not received it in the mail yet.
So let's get into this. Obviously, the free agency was big. We talked about the PLD trade last week. And that with the signing of Gavrikov made the financial constraints very tight in the pocketbooks of the LA Kings. And so all these big fish out there that other teams were going for, Kings fans knew we were not going to be a part of that. And trying to bargain hunt out there and see how they can fill out the roster. First domino really to fall was the goalie. So it was echoed from Dan Bernstein that they're going to go bargain shopping the free agency. Joe put out a wonderful article about all the goalies that possibly could fit that market. End up with Talbot. So had a down year last year in Ottawa. Two previous seasons were pretty good from the baseline stats. But Joe, you wrote the article, so I'll let you start here. What did you see from the analytics of Talbot, and what did you think of the signing and the cap hit and kind of where all of it came in?
I guess for starters, given where the Kings were, you know, how close they are to the cap, they really didn't have a lot to work with. And all things considered, I don't hate the signing itself. You know, the options, there wasn't a lot of options. There's no way you can give, for those that wanted to sign Korpisalo, you can't sign him to that contract. And that's, you know, what are you going to do? Even if the Kings had plenty of cap space, that's just a bad move. As far as Talbot, you mentioned the surface stats. 2 years, the 2 years prior to this one were pretty good. He had save percentages in the over 910. His goal save above expected, though, has been the sixth or seventh worst in the NHL when you combine them over the last 3 years per Evolving Hockey. So a little trepidation there. I think if there's a positive or an optimistic outlook here, it is the fact that he has been above average. I wouldn't say he's been great, but he's been steady in terms of making the saves he needs to make. His low danger save percentage and his low danger, the way he plays against low danger shots has been effective. It's been fine. Where he's gotten into trouble is he just can't make a, if the Kings are going to be giving up a lot of high danger chances, it's going to be a long, a long season for Talbot, but you know, the Kings don't do that. So it should be like, if there's a fit, you know, this could be it for the Kings could be the fit for Talbot. I don't think the goaltending's any worse than last season. I would expect it to be kind of comparable to what we saw that kind of when Copley kind of started to take the reins. I kind of think it would be very similar to that. I mean, you know, I don't think either of these goalies are going to be here stealing games, but generally speaking, the Kings don't play that way. You know, they don't need their goalie to steal games. So, you know, it's not going to be something that excites a lot of people, but I think all things considered, I don't hate it. Just because you had to have expectations going in, right? Depending on your expectation, you couldn't go in expecting to get, although I wouldn't assign Jari to that contract either. So, you know, all things considered, I think it's fine. I'll leave it at that.
So Kyle, Cam says in his press conference that, you know, it's nice to be back in the Kings system. Kings is a very goalie-friendly system. Do you think, and he said he wants to win a cup. So those were his two really main reasons for signing here. Do you think we could possibly see a little bit of resurgence of Talbot because of the system that the Kings play in?
I certainly think so. We saw what happened with Phoenix Copley last year. He came in to, like, after Cal Peterson got put on waivers and didn't put up great numbers, but put up, you know, decent numbers that can just, you know, give the Kings a chance to win, because the Kings had two goalies last year that were making almost $11 million and were somehow lactose intolerant and stopping the puck. So, but I think it's a low risk, high reward kind of signing, but I don't expect him to be great like he was 6-7 years ago when he had his best season. But like you said, he knows the system. So there's some familiarity there that he knows the system and that the Kings are a really friendly goalie system. They don't give up many of those high danger second opportunity chances. So we'll see what he has. I don't know who will be the starter come opening night. I think that will be determined by the end of training camp. But as Joe said, there wasn't really that many great goalies on the market. I mean, if you look at the trade, it was either Connor Hellebuck, who I would not want to pay $9 million for, as good as he is. Nashville seemed to be holding on to UC Saros. The other one was Tristan Jarry, and to me, Jarry got massively overpaid. That's a topic for a different day, but the Kings did, they filled a need, but next year I expect them to get someone bigger.
So Russ, we talked about a little bit or quite a bit over the season with the bargain hunting for the goalies. how maybe it's the new trying to win a Super Bowl with a rookie contract under a quarterback, right? Load your team everywhere else, get two goalies that are on the cheap and ride the hot hand because, you know, goalies are streaky. How do you feel like this tandem is going to shape up next season? And what is your feeling on Talbot as well?
No, yeah, I agree with what Kyle and Joe just said. I mean, you kind of look at where the Kings were doing last year going into the season. I mean, close to $11 million in goalies, especially for the production you were getting. It just didn't really make sense. So now it's gotten totally radicalized to the other side of the spectrum, right? Where now you're at a point where you're paying $2.5 million in goaltending. But it's weird. Like, I see this move. I see Rob Blake looking at this move going into the season with Copley and Talbot with the trade deadline in his sights, because it doesn't fit me as a Rob Blake kind of move to go into the playoffs with Cam Talbot and Phoenix Copley. He would have just, if he felt that way with Phoenix Copley, he would have just probably kept Pat and rode Phoenix in the playoffs last year. So if you're not expecting Cam Talbot to be better than Copley, then is Copley really going to be the one that takes you to the playoffs? I mean, I'm not going to be stand right here and say that I'm against that notion. If, like, let's say we're just fast forward to game one of the playoffs next season and Phoenix Copley is your starter, I'm not totally against it. But I would just say, like, I think Rob Blake is making this move thinking that, hey, let's just get through this regular season, win some games because we're a really good team in front of the goaltending, like you guys have mentioned analytically. I mean, before Gavrikov came in, they were ninth in goals against expected goals against per 60. And then once he came into the roster, they were moved up to second. So they're a great defensive team. You just need to have a goalie who's going to make some saves. And if you can just win some games, beat the teams that are probably lesser than you, just get to the playoffs, maybe you kind of reevaluate the goaltending situation when the cap space opens up a little bit toward trade deadline. And hey, maybe you get Connor Hellebuyck on the cheap at the trade deadline. Who knows? Maybe maybe Thatcher Demko is available. Maybe UC Saros is available. Just try to make that big swing then, just depending on when you're at. Because I think after this season or after this next season, I think that's when we'll see Rob Blake start to delve a little bit more into goaltending and get away from this one-year deal kind of veteran swing. So it'll be interesting to watch come trade deadline. But hopefully these two goaltenders can get you into that point and keep you in a playoff spot until then.
So the other goalie, the other person in between the pipes they hired is going to be 30-year-old David Rittich. Career 172 games played, a little bit of a journeyman, .904 save percentage, .287 goals. So he doesn't seem like a guy that's overly bad, just kind of a journeyman in the system. Going to be probably paired with Portillo in the AHL and not make him, you know, start 50 games for them down in the rain. So with that, I mean, if he had to start some games this year, how do you feel about David Rittich?
He's been an NHL goalie. He's an NHL backup. You know, I think he can come in and make some saves. Again, the Kings have a system that they limit shots against. They were great at that all season last year. So I think of the teams that are able to do what they're doing, the Kings are one of the teams that can kind of get by with this type of goaltending. So, yeah, if Rittich has to come in and play some games, and I would expect that he will, you know, Talbot's dealt with some injuries the last few years. He's getting a little bit up there in age. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Kings call on Rittich here. And so, yeah, I think he'll be steady. And just real quick, like the Kings – Kyle alluded to it with Copley. Like, it's not as if Copley was great last year. All he had to do was come in and basically be an average NHL goaltender, and that was good enough for the Kings to go on an absolute tear. So, and I think the Kings will get that from this combination of goaltending. Like, just don't actively hurt the team, and they should be fine. And I think that they can get that with this tandem. I agree, though, Russ, that I'd be hard-pressed to go into the playoffs thinking this is good enough. But I do think that it's a decent starting point for the first half of the season, kind of get their feet under them.
So we have a lot of positive things for Cam here. I think Rittich will be a nice little addition. You know, we got let's see, who is it? Green coming up here. Say Talbot will be like a Sean Burke from a few years ago. We have an agree there. Based on how bad our net was last year, it couldn't be worse. You know, so it could be worse. So those are the two goalies that we signed there. So, you know, like I said, 2.5 million. We're loading up everywhere else. Obviously, the cap's supposed to go up, different things. I know, but before that, I know that we signed one of the guys that they thought they didn't qualify an offer to, and that was Jad. And so they re-signed Jared Anderson Dolan to a 7.75. I believe the reason was, if I heard, was that it's a one-way deal. So he's automatically guaranteed that money, instead of having the qualifying offer be a two-way. So good for him coming back. Kyle, what do you think about with Jad, and where do you see him kind of fitting in this lineup?
I wasn't totally surprised that they brought him back. And also, as Russ alluded to it last week, is that he was arbitration eligible, so they probably didn't want to go through that. But I expect him to be like last year, maybe see some time on the fourth line, be like 13th forward. It's pretty much my short answer for that one.
Mm-hmm. Russ, where do you feel about this signing here?
Yeah, Kyle hit nail right on the head. 13th, 12th forward. I mean, it's like you hope to see more out of Jad, because it seems like he's such a good locker room guy. The coaching staff loves him. He's always the first person on the ice, always the last person to leave. So you want to root for that type of player, but it's like what else are we going to see from Jad at this point that we probably can't see from like a Fagimo or even like an Alex Turcotte or one of those players? I mean, how we even brought in Trevor Lewis that we'll talk about. So at this point, it's like people are like wondering like who could get waived for that last spot, because it seems like the Kings will only be carrying 21 players. I would expect Jared Anderson Dolan to probably possibly get waived at the when it comes to start of the season, just based off where the Kings are, the roster shaping up. So, but we'll see. I mean, he could fight for a spot. I don't think it'd be the worst thing if he won a spot either in camp.
I think he's a perfect 13th forward. I love him. I think I'm bigger on Jad than most people are. You could plug him in anywhere, left, center, right. He can play in a top six role, not consistently, right? But if something were to happen in a game or two, you need to shuffle some things around, he can play there. He can play an effective fourth line role. Like I said, he can spot in at C, he can spot in on the wing, he can play the penalty kill. He's capable on the power play. He was excellent on the power play with the range. So there's a talented player there. And I just think as a coach, I mean, I just think it's like, it's great that you can have a guy that can be that versatile, and he'll go stretches of games without playing, right? You're that 13th forward. You may not play for a while, but then you're going to be asked to do a job. And I think all things considered, he does it. So I think it's, whereas perhaps say one of a Fagimo, you know, one of the names you mentioned, Russ, and yeah, I would love to see a lot more of him, but I don't know that the role of that fits for Fagimo. I think he needs to be somebody that's kind of playing and getting reps, where Anderson Dolan, I hate to say that he's pigeonholed into a 13th forward role for his career, but I feel like he's just done a great job at it, at least right now with the Kings, to where just a great guy to have around to play everywhere. As Noah in the chat just popped in, utility player. Like, he's a jack of all trades. He can play a little bit of everything, and I think that has value.
Yeah, he's definitely got the attitude for it, right? I mean, if yes. No one's going to throw a fit or anything like that if he's going to be okay smashing. I think it was after the Ducks game in Anaheim, when not the one Kempe scored, not the last one, but what one of the games where McClellan even mentioned, like, it's tough to be rolling so well when you have some players that like can't play.
Mm-hmm. Was that the Copley Gibson showdown?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the Copley Gibson showdown. But yeah, it's just like, it's tough, because I think Jared Anderson Dolan right before then was scoring a couple goals here and there and doing pretty well. But then he had to take him out of the lineup because I believe somebody came back from injury. And that was one of the names I'm sure he was mentioning. So you can tell the team really likes him. And like, even when he wasn't qualified, I'm like, this guy's probably going to be back. And sure enough, he comes back on the league minimum, which is, I don't hate the signing, obviously. I think it's going to be really good for the team as far as roster shaping comes.
I also think that the Kings were relatively healthy on the forward front for the most of the season outside of the tail end. And, you know, that might not be – you look at Fiala and Velarde got injured at the same time. Normally those are kind of sporadic and spaced out. So he might not have as many stretches of not playing as he did last season, to where maybe we might get a more confident Jared Anderson Dolan because of a better or more consistent play. Nav comes in here with this kind of question. Is Jad the next Iofalo? And I don't know if he means the defensive juggernaut, or if he is just reiterating what Joe said as a utility guy, where you can just kind of plug and play him anywhere.
So I guess what I'll say is, I think he could be a good utility guy, defensive forward, but I guess it's different because John is coming into the Kings here and they're loaded. Their forward group above him is loaded. I mean, so I think when Iafallo was coming in, the Kings were still in that kind of transition to where Iafallo, here's first line left wing, you know, with Andre Kopitar, and John's not going to get that opportunity. So I think I don't know how, like you said, I don't know exactly what he means by the question per se, but I don't know that he's going to get the same look. And I don't know that he's got this quite the same potential in terms of offense, although I do think he's a talented player.
You know what's got potential is this podcast. If you smash that like button, thank you, Angel, coming in. Y'all need to smash that like button. Thank you for being in the chat. Appreciate you guys in here. You guys are coming in strong. Always a wonderful time doing these shows live. So please hit that like, hit the notification button and that bell to know when we're going live. Appreciate you guys there. Let's kick it over. I mean, not many people have heard of this guy. I was kind of surprised they signed him, but a man by the name of Trevor Lewis signed for $775,000, bringing back the veteran for the multi-Stanley Cup champion. This move did puzzle me, to be honest with you, because I thought the reason you moved out all this or signed all this cap and you have very little left is to let some of these kids play and develop, and then they bring in a veteran forward who can really be his, what he brings in and what his role is. It can be brought by almost anybody on the roster, the guy that we just talked about. So is this a leadership locker room because they're dwindling in those things? You lose Jonathan Quick. Is this kind of a leadership type thing? You know, they've been bragging about the secondary leadership core of Deneau and all those guys around that age group. Like, where do you guys see this signing? It was kind of puzzling for me. Not that I don't want Trevor Lewis back, but this ain't 2012, 2014. So what are we really getting out of this player? What do you think, Joe?
I think he's a defensive forward. I think he's a really sound defensive winger slash center, but I expect him to play the wing. You know, I'm puzzled by it, but at the same time, I've been warming up to it. I can see the logic. Like, the Kings have moved out a lot of depth. So you would be asking basically all of that depth to be filled by young kids that are relatively inexperienced. We don't even know if Turcotte's going to even be healthy enough to do it. So really you're looking at Fagimo and Anderson Dolan. So, you know, for the price that he's paid, it's fine. Like, unless if one of these kids forces their way into the lineup, I hope that there's not like a stubbornness to keep him in if it's warranted. But again, defensive forward, he'll be responsible. He kills penalties. He wasn't a great penalty killer last year analytically. So I don't know where he is at this stage of his career as a penalty killer, but I'm sure he'll get a look there. So it is what it is. I mean, if I set aside all the feels and the good stuff of the cup winner and all that stuff, and just look at it as the player they're bringing in, it is what it is.
That's exactly what it is, right? It's kind of like, but it's weird because like the first thing when I thought about with Trevor Lewis, I'm like, this is probably going to be like sporadically played, like here and there, spot play, night and Jad's in one night, Trevor Lewis is in the next night. But then you look at his games played, he's only missed two games in the last 3 years.
Yeah, I think he's an everyday guy unless somebody forces their way past him or whatever. I fully expect him to play.
Yeah, that's what – and for me, like I've said it a couple times on here too. Like I was looking for a player like Corey Perry, something kind of like that grit kind of type of guy. I mean, obviously Trevor Lewis isn't the Corey Perry type of grit, but that's the kind of player I was looking for, that veteran bottom six presence that the Kings were missing because – I mean, they didn't have that in last year. So I think it's a good move. Experience, obviously, leadership in the locker room. And he's a coach guy, too. So, I mean, like Joe said, too, he kills penalties. And for a team that was terrible at killing penalties, I mean, they need all the help they can get at this point. So I think it was actually a really underrated signing by Rob Blake.
I'm warming up to it, yeah.
For me, I was kind of a little shocked at first because I didn't anticipate when I woke up Saturday. I kind of slept in a little bit. I woke up. I was like, you traded all like those players, thought they would give like maybe a spot to like Samuel Fagimo or one of these other prospects. So it kind of blocks him. And as Joe mentioned, if he's not a good PK killer right now in his career, like what does he bring other than veteran leadership? And the Kings need probably as much help on the PK right now as well, because that PK is really horrendous the last couple of years. But I guess if you take away that and you ask me how I feel, if I just go based off the two cups, then I really love it. But I'm starting to warm up to it just a little bit, but I'm still kind of a little puzzled by it.
Yeah, the fans were loving it on Twitter. I think that was probably the favorite signing by the fans, bringing a fan favorite. A lot of people were throwing this around. What happens with number 22? Louis had it, 14 years, and Fiala's had it 1 year. Fiala is making 7.85. I usually follow the money. I think Trevor
arm Russell.
I think Trevor Lewis is just going to do what he is a vet, and he understands his role, and he's probably just going to come in and pick a different number, and that'll be it. Yeah.
They could just arm Russell for it.
Didn't he wore like
22A and 22?
He wore like 61 when he first came with the Kings. I wonder if he goes back to that. I think that was the number he first started with.
That was a very much a fourth liner number. 61. Isn't 61 Fagimo's number when he plays?
68.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's great. The last one that the Kings are probably gonna see the most of is defenseman Andreas Englund. Signs a 2-year deal at $1 million per. What does this signing say to you, Russ? Not a great offensive guy by any means. Has size, plays a decent amount of defense. But the 2 years was kind of puzzling for me, considering Bjornfoot, considering Mouvari has been here. They're keeping these guys down. Is this a size thing? Is this just more depth? Like, where do you view this signing for the Kings here?
Yeah, I think it's a size thing. But also, I think it's they don't trust Tobias Bjornfoot, because I mean we were all penciling him to be 3LD at the start of next season, and especially when you already have Jacob Mavarari signed, why couldn't those two players be the two players to round out that last roster spot? Rob Blake needed a little bit more experience, and he went out and signed a pretty much a bruiser, and I think Kyle brought up that highlight. He's the one that knocked out Alex Turcotte a couple of years ago, so. It's for me, I just think he needed a little bit more of a player that he can rely on in certain situations. I don't know if Andreas Englund's that type of player. Like if he's starting playoff games, I mean, you don't win playoff games with your third pair defenseman, but I mean, it's I don't expect him to play more than like 10 minutes a night. Kind of looking at that like Curtis McDermott kind of player, right? And he's just kind of going out there, throw a body around, maybe get in a fight or two, and then make something happen. So I don't view it as that much of in terms of him having a huge impact. But that extra year was a little interesting too, though. So I wonder if that's like, hey, if we eventually have to put him on waivers or something because Tobias Bjornfoot wins that spot out of camp, that extra year is going to deter other teams from trying to pick him up. So I think that's maybe was Rob Blake's thought process in that situation. But it was interesting just to bring in another third pair of left defensemen that didn't really have that much of a established, I guess, production value as Englund did. Because I was looking for a little bit more. I thought there could have been a little bit more done in this spot. Maybe you spend an extra $1 million. I know the cap space is tied, but maybe you waive like a Carl Grundstrom or something just to maybe try to secure that spot a little bit more. Because it just certainly doesn't seem like Tobias Bjornfoot is the one that they're penciling in for that spot out of training camp.
Kyle, we talked about it last time. We talked about the rain when you were on and how you didn't really see too much of Bjornfoot in the AHL as far as progression goes. Is that kind of why you think this decision was made? Because on two previous pods ago, this trio here thought that they were going to roll Bjornfoot, Clark, and Mouvari, just kind of seeing where who could catch it there, maybe have Spence, not Clark, but Spence play on the left. Where do you think that's kind of what it is, or is you agreement with it's kind of the side of the nastiness that maybe it was missing from the team last year?
I could see it from both ways. One, Bjornfoot just has looked uninspiring to me in Ontario. I mean, there's games where like last year on opening night where he made like a move where he just like dangled like three players and scored off a rebound. And there's games where you just look at him and be like, what are you doing out there? Like, like, what are you doing with the puck or doing in your own end? But so Englund, I guess with all the, they've signed like, the organization signed like three Colorado Eagles players that the Eagles have been a thorn in the rain side the last 3 years and end of their season. So I guess if you can't beat him, sign him, I guess. But the only thing he adds to this is just size. But I don't get it just because, like, that third left defense pair, like, if you're going with Jacob Molvari, at least you can probably depend, but I don't think he's a guy you're going to probably play all 82 games or try. Bjornflot has just looked uninspiring, and then Englund has I haven't seen many NHL games of him, but I don't really get it. And then the AHL, they have like a bunch of left-hand defensemen down there. I really, really didn't understand the signing. It's probably one of the signings I didn't like. And also the fact that he entered Turk a couple years ago. But that's a discussion for a different day, but I rest my case on that one.
A little vindictive there, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. You know,
So Joe, here's my question for you, because you already wrote about him. Let me maybe tee you up with a question here.
Sure.
I had a decent discussion back and forth with multiple Kings fans about the toughness of this team and how this team was one of the softest teams last year, and where fighting is in the game, where size is in this game, where the toughness is in this game. Russ brought up Trevor Lewis brings that grit, brings that kind of not nastiness, but he's willing to stand up for his teammates. He's willing to get in the scrums. He's willing to be in the crease and play with grit on the ice rather than after the whistle. Where do you see the role of toughness and grit within the game of hockey? And did the Kings need this type of player to balance out the amount of skill on this roster?
So I'm trying to keep an open mind about this signing because I'm not overly familiar with the player. I did talk to somebody that covers the Colorado Eagles, said just that, like, he's a defensive defenseman who will fight. He'll drop the gloves. And I guess I can sort of see the logic because, well, he's left-handed, and presumably your right defenseman on that pairing is going to be one of Clark or Spence, a very, very young rookie skilled defenseman that you know teams are going to be coming hard after, right, on a forecheck. So I'm trying to see the logic there to where if somebody's going to take a run at a Clark or a Spence on a forecheck, Englund's going to be there to step in and, you know, make it known that that's not going to fly. I don't know. Like, is that crucial? I get it. And listen, I understand it. I'm somebody that can appreciate that like old school mentality at times, but you got to be able to do something else. And like I said, I'm not going to totally say that this is a nothing player because I don't know a lot about him. From what it looks like analytically, he's a defensive defenseman, which is fine. And he takes a ton of penalties, which is not fine. So that can't happen. If he is capable, if he presumably is going to be fine in terms of zone entries, defending zone entries, all the left defensemen in the King system are good at that. So he'll probably be fine if he steps up, all that stuff. As long as he's not getting caught and taking penalties and be able to move pucks out of zones, like, it's, again, it's not what I would have done. Maybe that answers your question, Randon. It's not what I would have done because I just subscribe to play your best players, play your most talented players, and let's just go with it. That doesn't look like what the Kings. Well, I shouldn't say that. It's July. I mean, we don't know how things are going to shake out. There's a lot that can change. Like Russ said, maybe he's somebody that's waived. And you know, I remember, I mean, this was pre-free agency, of course, but, you know, Rob Blake pointed out that Clark and Bjornflot were probably going to be in that grouping of the bottom pair. So, you know, I'm not in love with it. I get the logic and I don't want to go too crazy because I want to see how it goes. Like, I don't know what their plan is exactly. You know, clearly they saw something to give him a 2-year deal. I really hope it's more than, ooh, he's 6'5" and can drop the gloves. Like, I just hope that there's more to it than that.
Yeah, I believe that's something that you need to to really consider. And it's tough. I was a huge fan of Lind, you know, Kaelin on the draft show because he brought skill with that sandpaper and fight. Like, I'm a huge fan of Tkachuk because of those reasons. Cause you got to bring something else. I would rather have a guy that can skate and play defense and exit zones that is small or not tough and doesn't fight rather than the guy that does one thing. I know that especially in the playoffs, I get it. There was a lot of cheap shots from Edmonton and stuff like that, but most teams aren't dropping the gloves in the playoffs out of risk of losing a guy for 5 minutes. So the fighting kind of goes down. Yeah, the hitting goes up. So, but what is he bringing to you on the ice? And I don't think any of us have studied any of his tape or much of his tape to know for sure what we're getting, but we're going to find out definitely in camp. Russ, let's get into kind of like where this roster after free agency and the trades, where do we find this roster? Maybe some line combinations that you might be intrigued by. How do you feel it shaping up here? If you want, just take it in any direction you'd like.
Yeah, for sure. I'll just start with the forward core. I think that first line's pretty much solidified at this point. Even Rob Blake's even said that Quentin Byfield's going to be starting off on the wing with Kopitar and Kempe, so we can pretty much pen that one in. But then this is kind of where things kind of get shaken up. I would expect Dubois to play with Kevin Fiala. I'm really excited to watch that pairing play together. But then on the other side, I know a lot of people kind of point to having the nice line, just keeping them together, and I get it. I can see that. We've seen them be one of the best lines on the Kings. I mean, if not in the NHL. But I'd like to see Victor Arvidsson play alongside those two with Dubois and Fiala. And the only reason I say that is because that would leave Arthur Kaliev most likely to be the one that would play with Deneau and Moore. And if you look back to 2 years ago, Kaliev's best time was with those two players. In fact, if you go back to what lines or their line of all lines that the Kings had that played 60 minutes or more, they had the highest expected goal share, those three players in Deneau, Moore, and Arthur Kaliev. So I think we need to find a way to unlock Arthur Kaliev, because if you think about it, the biggest wild card or X factor in this roster, nobody's second guessing Adrian Kempe anymore. He's solidified himself as one of the best premier goal scorers in the NHL. Nobody's second guessing Andrei Kopitar. He's shown that he's still got some left in the tank. Kevin Fiala is the best playmaker on the team. Pierre-Luc Dubois hopefully can be the player that we brought him in to be. It's all these young players that are on this roster that are sprinkled around. It's the Quentin Byfield that's on the first line. It's Arthur Kaliev that's going to be playing middle six time now. It's going to be those young defensive players, whether it be Brant Clark or Jordan Spence. So if the Kings can find any sort of production out of those players, I mean, you're talking about a team that could set their franchise record in goal scoring in a season. I mean, they're going to be that good. Just look at how they were last year without those players playing up to their potential. I mean, you think about it, Quentin Byfield had 3 goals last year. If he just doubles that, just 3 extra goals from him. If Arthur Kaliev continues his consistent play that he had at the beginning of the season before he broke his foot, I mean, you saw a player that was, I think he was leading the team in goals per 60 on the power play. So if you can find just that, and not to mention having in Brant Clark or Jordan Spence, probably one of the better offensive defensive prospects that the Kings have. So if you can just find that extra production out of those young players, I mean, this team could be a force to be reckoned with in the Western Conference. And I think they could vie for that Pacific Division title.
We got a lot of already agreeing and disagreeing with you. Darren comes in here. Kaliev needs to take the next step in his development on the third line. Not really shown or not ready to be thrown for top 6 minutes. Lieb disagreeing with you, saying, Arvi with PLD and Fiala, there's only one puck. Those are all guys that like to set up chances by ragging the puck and occasionally shooting, but mostly passing. Put Kaliev there, he just being fed all day. I think if you listen, I thought that originally too, but then if you listen to a lot of the Winnipeg podcasts and what they type of player that he needs to be paired with, you need a guy, they said a guy that can enter the zone on his own and create chances. That's Fiala to a T. And then you need a guy that's not afraid to shoot. And I think Arvidsson, yeah, he can create chances with his skating and being able to take people on one-on-one. But that guy ain't afraid to shoot from anywhere. And so if Arvidsson says, if you say, hey, we'll set you up, Arvi, to sit wherever you need to be and rifle off some of these pucks, I'm sure he's going to be perfectly okay with that. I just think on the nice line, he was the most physically gifted offensive player on that line. He was relied upon to do the one-on-one stuff. and create the goal scoring chances where you had more in the corners. Isano kind of playing that hybrid role. And PLD has said, like, I can be an amoeba. If you want me to shoot, I'll shoot. If you want me to be down by the crease, I can. If you want me to go in the corners, I'll do whatever is best for the line. And I think that kind of would fit well there. Joe, where do you kind of feel that middle six shaping up?
When the Kings first made the trade, my first thought was, yeah, keep the, you know, the Dano line together and Callie up there, and it's great. But the more you think about it, it's like you do want to be – I do wonder what that line is, because Kevin Fiala is not known for his defensive play. Arthur Kaliev is not known for his defensive play, and I think it would be it's a pretty big burden for Dubois to carry both of those guys defensively. So I'm kind of looking at it from the 200-foot view, because I do agree. Like, you get a guy like Fiala who is as good a playmaker as there is on the team, Dubois who's a good passer. So I like the idea of Kaliev on that line, and I do think there's spots where we'll probably see that. But I kind of agree, I think, with Russ that Arvidsson, you could talk me into Trevor Moore being up there too with I think that's a little interchangeable for me. But yeah, Arvidsson. Listen, for Kaliev, Philippe Deneau is a pretty good playmaker and play driver as a center at 5-on-5. I don't think that's an issue at all. Moore's got a motor.
Especially being shoved down. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you get Philippe Deneau against the other team's 3C. That's going to be a mismatch, especially with that was their second line last year, and they did quite well in the as a second line the last couple of years. So I think he can be really effective, Kaliev, that is, next to two guys that play well together in Deneau and Trevor Moore. I think that's the fit. I think that's what I would start with. The beauty of it is, I guarantee you, because I don't know, I get the sense that, like, I think Rod Brindamore says that, you know, coaching is coaching. Like, he coaches his kids' youth game. He's like, it's kind of the same. Like, I guarantee you, because I know this is exactly what I am doing as we speak right now, leading into like next year's high school season. He is having conversations, McClellan, with the other assistants, and they're throwing line combos back and forth right now. They're having a load of fun with this, and they're calling each other and trying to figure out what if this were. This is kind of fun. Like in this moment, I would say, for McClellan, as they try to figure this all out, and we'll probably see a little bit to see what works and who fits where. And it'll take a little bit of time to really get that solidified, as it usually does. But I would start with Arvidsson, Kaliev next to Deneau and Moore.
Kyle, that leaves the fourth line for you. You know, there's only a couple players. I'm assuming Lizotte and Lewis based on the signing are there, or maybe not for you. How do you feel like the third line is going to shape up to start the season?
So I think the fourth line.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. I think the fourth line is obviously going to be Lizotte. He's one of the best 4Cs in the NHL, in my opinion. And then, you know, I think those other two spots, there's going to be probably a handful of players that will fight for him. I think Samuel Fagimo is going to fight for it. Carl Grundstrom. You got Jad, Trevor Lewis. And I'm going to throw in a wild card here. I know this may not be a popular one. I think Alex Laferriere or Akil Thomas may be fighting for that spot too, if they have a good camp.
Nice.
I really like Alex Laferriere. When I saw Alex Laferriere play in Ontario, I really liked his game. He's got some size. He protects the puck, and he's got a little bit of grit and tenacity in his game. So I think he could be fitting on that fourth line. So I think there's going to be a bunch of players that are going to be fighting for that spot. I don't think there's any set in player that's besides Lizotte that's going to be on that fourth line, in my opinion.
Can I say this, Brandon? And I don't know if you were going to take it here, but yeah. My question is, we had the Kings had the second best. Well, I shouldn't say that. They at one point were, I think, the second best, but they were a really good power play last year. I don't remember what they finished. Was it top five? Did they finish
fourth?
Yeah, fourth on there. Yeah,
fourth.
So Gabe Vilardi played mostly down low, right? He's right-handed, and I know people might go nuts because I'm going to get back into the handedness, but if you think about, like, the way they would set up their 1-3-1 with that bumper position was highly more effective last year. We saw a lot of times last year where the puck would go from the wall, the flank, down low, bang, right back out to the bumper. That's really easy to do when you think about it. You have lefty on the wall, righty on the bumper, righty down low with Vilardi, and lefty in the bumper, which at times was Kopitar. It was kind of fluid at times with who was in there. Dubois is left-handed. I fully expect Dubois to play down low like Velarde did, but he's probably on the other side. If you remember the goal he scored against the Kings, it was from that the other side of his what would be kind of the right wing, if you will, but down at the goal line. So the goalie's glove hand to the goalie's left. Well, if you got a lefty there, that's an impossible. You can't really have a one-time play to the bumper when you got a lefty at that side passing to the lefty in the slot. Really interested to see, because the Kings don't have a right-handed player to play there in that bumper spot. You look at their lineup, it is all lefties, except for Trevor Lewis and Victor Arvidsson, neither of which I think are really that type of player. So that is a position, because I'm just really curious to see how that shakes out, because I really think they utilized the bumper more last year. And I think, and down low, they use both down low and bumper. And I think that's that they go hand in hand, because we talked about for however long the prior year, it was all perimeter, really nothing cross seam. And I think when they started to utilize the bumper, you started to see more cross seam passes, because they had to respect the bumper. They had to just, it just changes the killers. And now, again, with Dubois being left-handed and there's no righty option in that slot, I just wonder how they shake this out. I'm just genuinely curious. I don't know. Obviously, nobody knows, but maybe Jim Hiller right now. That's one thing I'm going to be watching as we go forward and we get into camp, we start playing preseason games. What does that look like exactly? How do they set this up? Because, you know, they can do it. It's just you're not going to have a one-time option from the bumper, perhaps. So again, not to say they can't do it. The bumper can still be utilized, just could look a little bit different. So I'll be curious to that.
Do you think they set it up the way Alex Iafallo scored that overtime winner in Edmonton on, they have PLD on that side and maybe in the bumper?
They can. So I think I think that's, who was it that made the, was it Arvidsson?
It was Arvidsson.
Again,
was Arvidsson or Moore.
So I think it was Arvidsson that made the play from behind the goal line, and he's right-handed. That's an easier play. Now, it can happen for a lefty. The tricky part for that is if it's the lefty on that side, he doesn't really have a play to the net as easily, right, because he's got to come out in his backhand. So it's just a little more awkward. So I do think they can still work it. It's just I'm just curious to see how they do it and what they decide to go with, because – you know, it's just they are so left-handed. It's crude. I don't know that I've seen a lineup like this.
It's a lot crazy of lefty that they traded both the righties defenseman that played power play. Yeah, I mean, Kapar righty played defense, a little power play. You know,
yeah.
Too many righty defensemen, too many lefty forwards.
Seriously,
I think
maybe that's the answer. Maybe that's the answer. It is, Kyle. Brant Clark. Brant Clark bumper. Maybe that's the answer.
Have him play. I'm sure he'd have plenty of fun playing down low if he wanted to.
I know Brandon would love that.
Hey, any more time for the train, the Clark train to get on the ice? I think he's going to revolutionize that second power play. I think you're going to have the power play look. I think the one and the two are going to look different now. But it's interesting if you put PLD to like Kempe's side over there, like and let Kempe like do you. But then you take away the one time, you know what I mean? Like it's going to be because that's all that Kempe is looking for is just that one time shot. So if you put him over there and maybe flip him in Kopitar, then you're not getting any one timers from Kempe off that wall. So it just really kind of messes it up there. I don't know. Maybe they go back to more of a just a net front presence instead of behind it. Maybe you swing him a little farther away from the gold post and kind of run a triangle from farther out and kind of have that. You see Washington a lot really like force all four guys to one side of the ice and kind of run a little box over there and then swing it over to Ovechkin for the one timer. So I'm sure they'll mess around with that quite a bit and see what goes on there. And Nav, if Brant Clark scores a Michigan goal this season, I will absolutely lose my freaking mind on that. So I think I'm going to throw it back down to the fourth line. And we talked about toughness a little bit and grit. Like, what line is going to have more motor than a Grundstrom, Lazat, Trevor Lewis line? Like, that line is going to be a pest for everybody. They might not score a lot of goals, but they're going to lay a lot of hits. Their Corsi is going to be far more in their area, and keeping that, keeping the momentum in the direction of the Kings. And if the Kings don't have momentum, you can probably rely on a line like that to create some physicality and create some momentum going in the different direction. Do the Kings need a line like that where they're not, it's not necessarily a bruiser line and an enforcer line, but all those guys have grit, panache, and don't take any shifts off?
I don't know if they need a line like that. I think it's just pretty much whoever you slot with Blake Lazat, to be honest with you. I mean, having Lazat as the fourth line center, I agree with Kyle. He's probably one of the best fourth line centers in the NHL. So I think we can all assume that Trevor Lewis is going to be there right next to him. But that other spot, I think, is just up for grabs. And I love that Kyle threw out Alex Laferriere's name, because, I mean, every time I've seen Laferriere play, he's just impressed me. And I remember going back to
he's all over the ice.
Dude, everywhere. Ice. I'm excited to watch him at this dev camp. And then even in the time he had with Ontario, like you mentioned, it's just, this is a player that it seems to just mesh right in any spot he's played in. And it's weird because we're not – as Kings fans, we're not used to rookies coming in and playing so well right off the bat. We're kind of used to just them kind of getting their bearings a little bit, and maybe needed some time in the AHL. But who knows? Maybe Laffy impresses
maybe a little too much time.
Yeah, and then maybe he impresses us and gets some time right in the NHL spot. So I know a lot of people are kind of looking toward like the waiver exemption and stuff like that for some players, especially like Fugimo, obviously Jad. But I don't know. You just look at the NHL. I mean, Philip Zadina just went on waivers and went unclaimed. It's not like these players are guaranteed to be claimed, especially when you get to the preseason when rosters are trying to get trimmed down, not necessarily get added to. So I think it's just a spot that's up for grabs. I mean, Turcotte is another name. Like you mentioned, Akil Thomas. Who knows? Maybe Martin Kromiak just goes lights out in the preseason and just goes crazy. So it could be anybody that really grabs that last spot. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's one of the young guns either. So I just got to say, this forward grouping, just, I am so excited to watch this team. You look at them up and down the lineup. I mean, on the first line, you have a 40 goal scorer with Adrian Kempe. On the second line, you have your best playmaker, one of the best playmakers in the NHL, in Kevin Fiala. On the third line, you have one of the best premier shutdown centers in the NHL in Phil Deneau. And then Blake Lazat to round out on the bottom pair, on the bottom line. Dude, I mean, this forward court is one of the best I've seen in the Kings in quite some time. Like, it's so – any spot, you can just run out there and have a good time. So, and that's part of the reason why this PLD trade was made. I mean, because last year it was Kopitar against McDavid and then Deneau against Dreisaitl. And you really had nobody else after that. So, now you have options. And I'm sure McClellan, like Joe's mentioned, he's probably – giggling, loving at the board. Yeah, loving this right now.
I would say, too, going back to the fourth line quickly, two players that could be on the fourth line were top four in the Kings in goals per 60. Carl Grundstrom was one of them. Sammy Fugimo was another one. So as much as I like the idea of Lewis and, like, you know, being a pest to play against and all that stuff, I just – a fourth line that can score. Like, Lazat can set guys up. Grundstrom has shown the capability to finish. He had 12 goals last year. Like I said, he was fourth on the team in goals per 60. I know Fugimo only played 9 games. I say that a little tongue-in-cheek that he led the team in goals per 60. But he was a productive 9 games. Like, he came up and he did what he had to do. He scored. That's what he's here for. So, like, I just think it's a it could be a little
bit. It also gives you a right-hander on the power play.
Oh, see? And yeah. There we go. A shooter from the bumper. I don't hate it.
Joe, you're just about playing the most talented, skilled players, right?
That's kind of I mean, I don't want him to be like totally deficient per se. Like, I don't necessarily want to win every game like 7-6, but if you're on the margins, like when we're talking about Trevor Lewis versus somebody that can score, I'm probably going to take the guy that can score. When we're talking about Andreas Englund and a guy that can move pucks, but I'm going to want the guy that can move pucks. So, like, that's – I'm not talking all the way throughout the lineup per se. Like, it's just when you're talking, like, fourth – I just want to maximize those positions on the team, because it may sound nice to have this hard working roll up your sleeves and that's great, but if they don't actually do anything, what are they actually doing? So if you have the opportunity to have somebody that can score on your fourth line, if you have the opportunity to play a third pair D that can be influential in the offensive zone and move pucks and get out of your zone efficiently, now you're creating mismatches with your third pair and you're creating mismatches at your fourth line. So that's kind of where I'm like, that's all I'm trying to do. Yes, that's it, Nav. Like, I'm trying again, I don't want to do it at the expense of something. Like, if Fagimo is a train wreck defensively, okay, well then it's not going to work, right? Then you put Lewis back in. But like, that's my approach to this is play your skilled guys. And then if, you know, let them figure it out, because there's a reason they're your skilled guys. They're going to get things figured out. Play your better players is in general how it is, but we'll see. We'll see.
With the Fagima line, you could technically have two guys, you know, if you get 10 goals from each of those guys at the bottom, I mean, Grunstrom did it last year. Lazat can do it. Yeah. I mean, obviously he played up, and then Fagimo could shoot the puck. I mean, if you get 10 goals from each of those guys on the fourth line, that's an effective fourth line.
Well, and Fagimo has really evolved. I mean, it started a couple of years ago, Randon, with the Rain. Like, he was a pretty good two-way forward. He was an underrated forward the way he played defensively. So he played PK in Ontario. Like, I think he's kind of rounding out his game a little bit to where I think he's capable. So
I will say the one here, thing I like Green coming here, when you're thinking about this of the fourth line so much, you know your roster is lit.
I will say, though, one thing I liked about the PLD trade is that it moved Phil Deneau from the 2C to the 3C to get more balance. Because I don't know how many times we saw, maybe too many times, where Bukestad would go on the ice for a faceoff in that series, win it, go off, and then you see McDavid or Draisaitl come by. So now you have Deneau as the 3C that can go take those faceoffs and not allow that to happen. And you also have another good defensive forward in Trevor Moore on that third line. So I think the Kings in that area on the bottom six can match up a little bit better than they did this past series against Edmonton. And then it also helps that Yamamoto and Klim Kostner are no longer on in the Oilers uniform as well.
The King so. Killers. Yeah.
Yes.
Let's get into the draft. I think I think we've talked about the line. We're probably going to do a lot more every single month, but let's get the draft. Let's get those players their due. Kings made 5 picks. Reports were that they tried to move up and down multiple times, were denied close to 12 times in the third and fourth round to move up and grab some guys. Starting off with the second round pick at pick 54, Jacob Dvorak. He was one of my guys. After doing more research about him in depth and stuff like that, I'm a little bit less high on him. I don't know. Obviously skating and I've never seen it be used from Scott Wheeler as like, it's a major red flag. It's like a detriment to other players on the roster about how bad his skating is, but he's a big left shot defenseman. He's going to be able to play on the defensive side of the puck. He's rangy, and he has a power shot. Where I do think that we don't really know what this guy is that he's often injured. And so taking that much time off in your draft year, is that not allowing him to develop? Also, I remember being 6'4", 6'5", in high school, tall, gangly. Like, I wasn't really used to my height, you know, with your legs and everything like that. So skating might be able to improve once he gets used to his body and he fills out a little bit more. But as far as like from what was missing from our prospect pool, I think it's a great fill in for the prospect pool, just because we don't really have any left shot D anymore. Kim Nusainen, Kirasanov's in Russia, but who knows if he's ever going to play in the States. And so from a prospect pool kind of construction, not really what the needs of the Kings. I liked it as far as it's adding depth to a position of need at that area.
I would agree.
Yeah, so you obviously pegged him as one of your guys. I like the pick too. And it seems like that the Kings don't really value skating in terms of some of their draft picks. I mean, you look at Brant Clark, no one expects him to be a good skater. Arthur Kaliev, Gabe Vilardi, some of the more premier prospects that have come up, they're really known as good skaters. But I don't know. It's just when I watch Dvorak play, I like that. First of all, I like that he's the captain. He was the captain of the Czechia squad at the under-18s. I love that. So obviously they look at him like a premier player. and he's a leader on the team. And we're going to be able to, this is another thing I'm kind of excited about, and it probably has nothing to do with the player, but this is a player we're going to be watching probably in World Juniors coming up here too, as being one of the leaders of a team like Czechia in these next couple of World Juniors. So I don't expect him to come over to the NHL soon, or maybe for a couple of years. But yeah, like you mentioned, Randon, it certainly feels like this wasn't a pick of like best player available. This certainly felt like a pick of need at this position, which I kind of get because it's so
well. Yannetti countered that statement by saying they had four or five guys in that tier. They took a calculated risk not to move up and grab the guy they had higher up in the tier because they felt like one of their three guys or four guys was going to fall to them at their pick. And this was the last one available within that their tier of guys.
Players.
Just shows how deep this draft was.
Yeah, I don't know. I just felt like you probably could have gone more exposed. It's obviously his second round in the draft. Like, what are we going to know at this point? But it just felt like felt like a reach to me at that point. I don't want to say a reach, but it felt like you were drafting for need at that position more than anything.
If he was 6 foot, he probably doesn't get drafted at all by anybody. Yeah. In exactly. 7 months.
I mean, you watch his highlights. The best part of his game is poke checking the puck off somebody's stick. It's not like a shot or like a smooth play up the ice. It's like your defensive game. And I don't want to have a drafted player just based off defense, especially at that young. Right. So it's like I don't know, but I understand it. I understand the pick a little bit.
No, I don't, Russ. I don't like.
I'm trying to paint a rosy color here. I'm trying to be a little.
Hey, we did that with a lot of the stuff. We were rosy about Cam Talbot. Go find anybody right now that's rosy about Cam Talbot the way we were to start this pod. And again, listen, it's a draft pick. I'm not going to sit here and hammer on this 18-year-old. And first of all, good for him. Like, couldn't be happier for the kid. It's just when we did the you know what we're looking at and finding guys to pick. You know, the thing that I tried to look for, and again, I don't know these players. I'm going off of scouting reports. So full disclosure, obviously. You're looking at traits. You're looking for tools that are like first-round tools, first-round traits, but he slipped for some reason or another, right? And so, like Kaliev, you mentioned his skating. He slipped because in large part because of his skating, but he had some elite traits to him, and he slipped because he wasn't a great skater. Like, I don't think you need to pick a guy who is graded as the worst skater in the draft or among the worst skaters in the draft. That's pretty, like, to spend a second round pick on that is a little scary. Like I said, if he was anything below 6'3", he probably doesn't even get drafted. So it's just, this is a pick for size. And listen, Yannetti has, I trust Mark Yannetti. So he clearly sees something in the player. But, boy, it seems like there was some talent on the table that was just left off. I mean, there's a lot of people that had, and I know the guy that I liked was Luca Cagnoni, the defenseman that ended up going to San Jose. Again, look for first-round traits. Look for first-round tools. And based on scouting reports, he is a first-round talented player in terms of the way he moves the puck, first-round in terms of the way he thinks and sees the ice. But he's 5'10". Again, give me the talented guy. That's just how I look at it, because now you have a guy, because yes, he's been injured, right? Dvorak's been injured. So that's going to slow his development a bit. And I do trust that his skating will improve. As you mentioned, Randy's going to grow into his body. But, and so maybe the thought is, you know, he's going to be a project, right? You're probably looking at somebody that's 4 years out before he's even in consideration for the NHL. And I guess that's fine. If they're good with that, then I get it. It's just, boy, I just don't think you need to do that because he's 6'5". And let's be honest, it's because he's 6'5". He was 6'5", you said, right? I think that's what he collected it. If he's 6'1", he doesn't get drafted.
Doesn't this feel like they just like are like can immediately just throw him into a 1-3-1 system? It's the exact type of player that they've been looking for.
Not if he can't skate, but yes.
I mean, that's what we see with Vladislav Gavrikov. Just sits there at the blue line and denies entries. It's exactly what it feels like.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, but which is weird because you got an 18-year-old kid who's probably years away. Like, who knows what could
happen. We're going to be watching this 1-3-1 for forever.
But no, you're right. I mean, I just
and they could have gone more explosive there, right?
They could have gone with somebody like that at least wasn't one of the worst of something in the draft.
Yeah.
But again, I won't sit here and try to pretend that I'm like Mark Yannetti, because I'm not.
What do you think, Kyle? We've given our opinions. What do you think?
At first, I didn't really mind or care for the pick. But now after seeing Joe sending Scott Wheeler stuff in our Hockey Royalty chat, I was like, oof. Like, if you can't skate at the NHL, if you can't skate in hockey, like, that's a really big issue. If you're skating, it's a big issue. But there's only one word as to why you got drafted, and that's size. I mean, they drafted with need, like you guys said. They really don't have any left-hand defensemen. They really, and it seems like they're starting to stack up the pipeline with some bigger bodies now, with Andre Lee, Samuel Hellenius, Caleb Lawrence, and now Dvorak. So I think we're starting to see them start to go in that direction just a little bit now.
They weren't quite the Coyotes though.
Yeah,
who drafted a basketball team.
Yeah, but yeah, we could I could have gotten something better with that pick in the second round, but from what I'm seeing, it sounds like he's more like a project because he is only 18 right now. But we'll see what they can do with him.
I'm gonna paint a little bit of positivity because he is our second round pick here. One, he played in a professional league, so he played for I'm gonna butcher this, Liberec of Extraliga. Only had 6 penalty minutes. So usually young kids, you know, out of position playing against adults, he didn't seem out of place in that league as far as, you know, 6 penalty minutes. He was playing time for a pro team. Russ already mentioned the captaincy for the U18s. And so I think that there is something to be said about him as character. And at 17 years old, you're 6'5", 209. I mean, you're probably going to be 6'5", 230, 235. You know, he's going to be a big body that's going to be, if he can learn how to skate and use that size, you know, you're going to have a, you know, obviously the team needed a third line left shot D this year. I mean, he could be that shutdown type guy, if he grows into the skating. And if you're a captain, you obviously know the team well, you know the locker room well, and you know your hockey IQ for the most part. So I think there's probably some intangibles there that they really did like, and I'm sure he interviewed very well. Because of that captaincy. So
sorry, Randy. That's something I'll say as a positive too, right? Like, because if generally speaking, if you're going to be a captain and you know what you need to do to get better, and you're going to work hard to do that, because generally you're setting that example for the rest of the team. So if there's a deficiency in his game, I trust that he's going to be a guy that's going to work really hard to get that deficiency out and turn it into something that's a positive. So, you know, between that, the injuries, the size, and him growing into his body, like, I'm not saying it can't happen. It's just, you know, it's a project.
Probably, you know, I don't want to foreshadow too much, but definitely my favorite pick of the draft is Cohen Zimmer, number 78 in round, or number 78 overall in the third round. He is 18, played for Prince George Cougars of the WHL, 6'1", 194. Had 41 goals, 48 assists, for a total of 89 points in 68 games with Prince George. And that was his second consecutive 30-plus goal season. Simmer's 41 goals ranked second on the Cougars and seventh among everybody in the WHL. Out of Alberta, he was 7 points in 10 games in the playoffs. And so he averaged 0.99 points per game in his 160 career WHL games. Where this guy really gets me is his interview. He's like, I was born to score. I like to score. I'm going to put the puck in the net. I'm also not afraid to piss you off and drop some gloves. I like hitting people. I like fighting. That's the type of player I thought the Kings would be dealing with Kalen Lind, and they found him a lot later. He's not necessarily a playmaker, so you got a goal scorer with some edge instead of Lind with a playmaker with some edge. Definitely my favorite pick of this draft, and somebody that really kind of rounds out, gives you a little bit of everything and adds more to the goal scoring, definitely ticks up the toughness in the prospect pool and just kind of adds a little bit of something different. Russ, what did you think about this pick here?
Yeah, I'm right with you. I, I freaking love this pick. I mean, just the first goal I see is him doing some dangle going into the ice and then some filthy backhand. And then that little twirl celebration that he has, like, dude, give me that. I want those type of players. Give me some entertainment. Give me some electricity. I want, like, and you said it best. He's not afraid to drop the gloves. He's not afraid to hit people. Like, where was this guy? Why wasn't he drafted first overall? And I mean, it's like, you look at it, all of the characteristics that you want to see in a hockey player, that confidence, that entertainment value. I mean, that physicalness. I mean, everything. It's just like you're, and then, but it's another player that just was, people are iffy on his skating, but it's weird. Cause I didn't even really notice it watching him play or watching some of the highlights. I'll have to watch maybe some of his games, but yeah, I love it. I love this confidence. I love the highlights. And whenever you can score 40 goals, whether it be the WHL, OHL or whatever, I mean, you got a little bit of skill in you there. So this, I'm right with you. It's probably my favorite pick, and I'm glad that it didn't seem like that type of player that the Kings usually draft. It seems like they always kind of draft maybe projects or kind of, like I mentioned, for need a little bit more. But yeah, love it. Love the pick.
It's a fun one. Yeah, no question about it. It's not my favorite. It's my second favorite pick of the Kings draft, but a really, really fun pick. I don't have a lot to add other than what you guys did. Like, this is the a type of player that I think, Brandon, you said, the Kings don't really have in their system. You know, it's the reason that you liked Lind so much too, right? So it's an exciting player. Should be a fun one to follow here for a couple of years.
I would have to agree with everything what Brandon said. When I saw, like, them pick him, and then I saw his highlights, I immediately thought the first one that came to my mind was steal. Like, this was a steal for the Kings. They should have been maybe a second round pick from what all the people were saying. But I mean, he had grit, sandpaper, is not afraid to be physical, can score goals, and he's very crafty with his stick handling on the puck. So I think the Kings did really good with this pick, better than I think they did with the second round pick.
Agree with that.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be an interesting player. Where, how long he waits in the WHL, right? Because of the rules, so you're probably thinking,
I think 20.
He's play, right? Down there till, yeah, he's gonna play down there till he's 20, and then so 2025 or so, you'll be able to see him in the AHL there, Kyle, playing for the Rain, hitting people, taking penalties, and clapping one timers from the dot. So definitely interesting player, somebody to keep an eye out for with the forward group that has an abundance of skill. Get some grit there for the forwards. Let's kind of move this along a little bit quicker here. Next pick in the fourth was Hampton Slukinski, goalie in high school in Minnesota, establishing he was a 28-1-1 record with a 1.47 and 941 save percentage with 9 shutouts in 30 games. So a very elite in the high school realm. His 28 wins led all Minnesota high school goaltenders. He's 6'1", 179, and his whole high school record was 57-6-3 with 20 shutouts. He gave him the Frank Bribnik Award, which is the top senior goaltender for the state of Minnesota. So definitely has that high-end acumen for one of the best hockey states out there. And he represented the USA in two tournaments, which is the World 18s, Under 18s, and the Hlinka Gretzky. So kind of guy that I didn't really have on. He was ranked 200 and something by most people. The Kings seem like they feel like they got somebody here in the fourth round that has done nothing but win his entire career and maybe is a long project. It kind of took me off guard, Russ. What about you?
Yeah, I don't obviously know too much about a high school goaltender, but the one thing I will say is Warward High School has one notable alumni. It's Brock Nelson. But yeah, U.S. development camp invitee. Maybe he gets a look at some World Junior games. But I think what college is he committed to? Kyle, you might know. I think it was.
I think it's University of New Hampshire, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
I haven't really checked. But
I'll look. I mean, fourth round goalie. We'll see what happens. Kings haven't been too good at drafting goaltenders, so it's hard to say too much in that position. But
Hashtag goalies.
Yeah, exactly.
In round five, we get a right shot defenseman here, and Matthew Mania definitely wins best name of the draft class here. Registered 38 points in 67 games for the Sudbury Wolves of the OHL and was 1 of 1 for 2 in 4 OHL playoff games. 6'1", 190 defenseman. Almost a half point per game player in his career in Sudbury. And then so looking at this pick, very skillful. Joe, where do you? I believe this might be your favorite pick of the draft.
This probably comes to surprise nobody that this is my favorite pick of the draft. And when I was looking at after the draft was happening and all that stuff and seeing and trying to read a little bit about each of the Kings players, like, oh, who did they pick? Because certainly don't know all these guys. In the first sentence on his Elite Prospects page in there from their draft guide is, quote, few players squeeze as much value out of every puck touch as Matt Mania. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I want. I want this. This is the type of defenseman I want. I still think this is where the game is going, to have these high-skilled defensemen that can skate. And maybe they're a little risky, but I love it. So, this is feels like a boomer bust type of pick. Like if he hits, he could be awesome, really productive defenseman, or he could just be a career AHLer. I don't know how it all plays out, but I love taking the shot at the talent in this round. So I love the pick.
Yeah, I think that with the amount of that they've traded out from the right side in the prospect pool also fills a need there, getting rid of a lot of the right shot defensemen. So you're getting a guy, putting him down the line, and when the team is ready for maybe Doughty to move on or what there, and Brent Clark's the number one right shot. Maybe we see Matt in 4 or 5 years down there and getting an opportunity to knock on the door. Kyle, I'm going to kick it over to you to our last pick here before we talk about Dev Camp. Is in the sixth round, Ryan Comeny. He is skated for 60 games for Sioux City Musketeers in the USHL. 33 goals and 29 assists in 60 games played, so over a point game player for the USHL. Led all skaters with power play goals, points, goals, plus minus shots, shooting percentage. So he led his team in almost every single offensive category, 5'10", 185. And so he's definitely a guy that can put the puck in the net. He's committed to playing in the University of New Hampshire this fall for in D1. So getting a guy in the sixth round that's a point per game player for the USHL seems like a pretty good pick right there.
Yeah, I didn't really do too much detail with this pick after, but I think he does have some potential. So it could end up being a good pick. Usually some six-rounders, the odds of them are making the NHL roster very slim, but we'll have to wait and see how he does in development camp starting tomorrow and how he progresses at college and then eventually when he turns pro.
He just seems like a four-year guy there, so it's going to be the slow burn for Comeny here. Let's get into Dev Camp. One, Mr. Kyle is going to be going. Russ is going to be there. So while I'm pulling up the roster, maybe talk about Dev Camp. What do you typically see as a fan in case one of our fans wants to go there, Russ?
Yeah, Dev Camp's a lot of fun. I mean, if you get a look at a lot of these prospects that we've been talking about, especially with the Kings, I mean, it's been nothing but prospect talk for the last like 5 or so years. So you finally get to see some of those players that you hear about. But I mean, first couple of days, kind of just practicing, running some drills. I think the forward or defenseman is it?
Defenseman go first.
They go first tomorrow. Okay, so
yeah, defenseman 9 a.m.
9:30. Forwards jump on at 11. They have scrimmages every now and then at 3. I think they only do it a couple days. But I would highly recommend if you can only make it to one day, just go on Monday at 9 a.m. if you can, because they have a scrimmage that they pretty much set up like an actual game. They have referees there. They have breaks, face-offs, all the fun stuff. So if you're a fan of the Kings and you want to see these prospects, head out to Dev Camp. Try to make it on Monday at 9 a.m. when they have scrimmage. So I think, Kyle, you'll be there on Monday, right?
I'll be there Thursday. I'm going to leave early Friday because I have somewhere to be in the evening, so I got to get out early. But I'll be there Monday. I won't be there over the weekend. Got to take some time off.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm gonna be there tomorrow. Try to get there. I'm gonna get there on Friday too. I'm not sure if I'll make it over the weekend, but definitely gonna be there Monday. So yeah, it should be a lot of fun.
Let's get into the roster here and see some of these players that that fans come out and see, these high draft picks. Francisco Pinelli, the Italian Stallion, is gonna be out there. Martin Kromiak, Jared Wright, Ryan Comeny, Jack Hughes, right? Second round pick, played in college. So try to see him a little bit again. Maxime, Alex Hordier, Ben Steves, Kenny Connors, all the way back from Finland again, Antu Jamson, LaFerriere, Sammy Hellenius, One of my favorite prospects that hasn't really touched ground in the U.S. Is Casper Simon Tyvall is going to be there. Caleb Lawrence, Kohan Zimmer. On the defensive side, you got Mania. You got Dvorak. You're going to have Krieger, Pauls, Jack Sparks, Otto Slotin, or Slotin. But my man, the myth, the legend, Brent Clark will be there. So if you want to see yourself of the unicorn in public, get yourself down to the arena. Goaltender is going to be interesting. Third guy trade for with a third pick. Third round pick Eric Portillo is going to be there, and newly drafted goaltender Hampton, as well as another goalie from Michigan. He's going to be a camp invite. So lots of big names, lots of stuff to see. What might be some of your guys' favorite players to see? And maybe is there some stuff that we can kind of take away from Dev Camp, or are you interested to see about a certain player?
I think the player that you just mentioned that I think we're all kind of interested to see is Casper Simon Tyvall. It's just, you've heard so much hype about this player. I mean, myself especially, we see him at the World Juniors playing for Finland. Just seems like a goal scorer. So yeah, this is going to be the first time I believe he's coming over in Los Angeles. So I'm excited to see what Simon Tyvall could bring. Cause I mean, you just see him scoring goals. I just want to see him play like in these kind of games and amongst like his age group and see how it can bear and fare. I mean, it's not necessarily that, and like you asked, it's like, what can you take away from it? Of course, you're not going to just obviously think about what a player, what his potential could be just from dev camp. But hey, who knows? Maybe a player lights it up a little bit. I remember last year when I was talking about Alex Laferriere. He was one of my favorite players to watch. He just lit up the ice every time he was on it. And sure enough, he gets signed to an entry-level contract just a couple months later. So, yeah, I mean, it's not much you can take of it, but it certainly can bring a little bit of entertainment to the Kings a little bit.
Yeah, I would say my pick, I have a couple, but I'll go with the first one is Pennelly. After seeing the season he had with the Kitchener Rangers in the OHL, I've been really looking forward to seeing him turn pro this year, just because he can kill penalties, he can score, and he can dish the puck. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. Alex Laferriere is another one. This is actually my first time going to development camp, so this is all like a kid in a candy store for me. It's all brand new, so I'm just looking forward to it. But there's quite a bit of players, even Otto Salin, I think that's his last name. I'm looking forward to him. I know he hasn't touched base in the U.S. yet, but I'm looking forward to those three for sure. Portillo.
I'm genuinely curious to see how Portillo does. Like I think this is a big adjustment year for him coming out of college, and for his size and the way he plays. I'm curious to see how this goes for him, but really I want to see the guys that could potentially maybe knock on the door this year. Like I'm looking at a Laferriere, I'm looking at a Chromiak as guys that, are they ready if the Kings do need somebody else? I mean, we know Fagimo's knocking on the door. Injuries happen. Like one thing that the Kings did lose in the trade with Pierre-Luc Dubois is they lost a lot of depth in terms of, like, I think the team's deeper in terms of quality down the lineup, but they've lost depth in terms of the amount of players if there's an injury or something like that. So is a guy like Laferriere able to step in? Is Chromiak able to step in? So I'm really curious to see how these guys look in dev camp. And as Russ, you mentioned, like this is the second year for a couple of them. So I want to see how they look in this.
I think my number one is probably going to be Portillo, just because I think the goalie prospect pool is weak, right? They didn't re-sign Villalta. We don't really know what we have in Ingham. He had a back surgery last year, big injury.
Have they signed him yet?
Jacob Ingham? Yeah, I think they did. And so you're looking at a lot of unknown within the prospect pool there. So Portillo was traded to be a guy for the team, and see what they can get out of him. And so I just want to see him. Not that he needs to take over the whole dev camp. I just want to make sure that he looks in that place with amongst his peers. Because there's going to be a lot of firepower shooting at him. I mean, that forward group is pretty nasty. So I'm not expecting him to blank anybody. But just making sure that he's not looking out of place there.
I will say, you mentioned his name, and I want to just at least give a shout. Matt Villalta, you said he's off now. The Kings did not bring him back to the organization. He's off in Arizona. You know, he had a good run with the Rain for a few years. And I know, Russ, you talked a lot about hoping to maybe see him last year. And it just really looked like the fit wasn't going to be here. He wasn't going to get the opportunity here. So I just want to, you know, best of luck to him. He was a guest, Brandon, for you and I. He was an incredible kid to talk to, and I wish nothing but the best for him. He was, again, by all accounts, a great, great kid on and off the ice. So hope he does well in Arizona and gets a shot in the NHL.
I will say for Vallalta, it was a rough season for him, not performance-wise, but just what happened with the Cal Peterson situation. It really took starts away from him. And then I think the trade for Portillo kind of pushed him out the door a bit there, signifying that, you know, he's higher up on him on the depth chart in the future. So it sucks. He's, from what I've seen in the interviews with Jared Schaffrin on the Rain YouTube channel after games, that he's like, he's a very good person. He works really hard. And I remember his last start was the season finale. All the players off the bench and a losing effort came on and like gave him like some pats on the head and like some hugs. Cause it was a hard season for him. He went from the starter to completely just the backup because they had to work on Cal Pearson's game. So, I mean, it sucks. Hopefully he gets a few games in Arizona. So hopefully he gets a couple NHL games there, cause they won't be contending. So maybe if there's any injuries or any trades that he gets a shot.
Yeah, I think we'll be a lot of Kings fans will be paying attention to Arizona and what they do, especially with Sean Durzi there. He's projected to be their number one right shot defenseman in the lineup, which I've always been a Sean Durzi guy, so I would expect him to put up a lot of points, maybe make a few blunders here and there. And also, like you mentioned with Vallalta, hopefully he gets a couple games. But I know a couple of people are asking if we're going to be live streaming or posting. Yeah, I'll be posting as many videos as I can. And then on Monday for the scrimmage, my plan right now, and hopefully Kyle can help me out, my plan right now is to live stream the scrimmage if the team isn't doing so. Because, I mean, I'm a fan. You guys are all fans. We want to watch as much content as we can. Obviously, this is the last activity that's going to be going on for a couple months here in the summer. So, I mean, it's a little disappointing when you don't see the team, like, put, like, these type of games online. It just seems like such an easy thing to do. So if they're not going to do it, I'm going to try to do our best to get it on the Hockey Royalty YouTube page and get as much content out there for you guys. Maybe we'll do a little bit of announcing. I don't know. I'm just going to try to be doing it for my phone. So don't expect like some Bally Sports West
production
or anything like that. Alex Faust is going to come by or anything like that. So, but yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And then, one player I think we just got to talk about would be interesting to watch during this week is Brant Clark. I'm really curious to see his confidence level at this these next couple days here. I mean, we've seen his confidence obviously be shown during his short time with Los Angeles, but now that he's coming in with a year under his belt, he's got a couple NHL games playing. He's going to be coming in knowing that he's probably the best prospect in the Kings system. So I'm curious to see how he fares going up against some of these other prospects, and also how some of the other prospects fare against him, knowing that he's probably the competition to beat out. So that'll be an interesting dynamic to watch in these little scrimmages here.
Yeah, Lieb wants really you fun. To see if you can mic up Brant Clark for your television.
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. I mean, I would always love to, like, I mean, it's weird because I make the same comparison like Drew Doughty. Like, you don't need to. You can close your eyes and you can know when Brant Clark's on the ice because you can just hear him talking. And that's how Drew Doughty's always been. You just close your eyes and you know Drew Doughty's playing because he's constantly just chattering on the ice, calling for the puck or whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, Brant Clark, awesome interview, awesome on the ice, and certainly a great player. So that'll be fun.
I just love the swagger he has. Just has that chip on his shoulder. Like, he knows he's the best player. I don't think we have a prospect like that for a very long time.
He's my favorite. He's my baby boy. I think that's going to do it for us here at Hockey Royalty. You can find all of our articles at hockeyroyalty.com. Please follow us at @hockey_royalty, @RandomCommando24, @JWPaterino, @NHLRussell, and @Kopitar4HOF to get all your Kings and Rain news. Dev camp starting tomorrow, so go out and check that out. Be glued to Twitter unless there is swiping requirements for Elon Musk that come up tomorrow. Then maybe you might have to wait for the paper trail to come out. Appreciate everybody in the chat. We were strong. Thank you guys for coming here. Please smash that like button. Really appreciate you guys doing this. And I'm excited to see what content comes out next week from Dev Camp, and we can talk about it here on the pod. As always, on this podcast, go Kings, go.